Thank you.
All right. Public hearing, transfer of funds for the elementary school additions. We welcome everyone. Good evening on this wonderful, beautiful day in Glen Ellen. So, call to order. The public hearing will now come to order. Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis. Mrs. Wilkinson.
Present.
Mr. Elger.
Here.
Mr. Escalante. Mr. Bochensky.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson.
Here.
Mr. Kendrick.
Here. The purpose of tonight's hearing is to consider the authorization of a permanent inter-fund transfer in the amount of $4,300,000 from the school district's education fund to its operations and maintenance fund for operations and maintenance and other authorized school purposes. Notice of tonight's public hearing was published on November 13, 2014 in the Glen Ellen News, Suburban Life Media. To date, district officials have not received any comment or testimony. The board will take action on the matter during the regular board meeting that follows this hearing. Is there anyone present that would like to provide public comment as it relates to this action? Anyone? No one? Okay, hearing none, I'd like to adjourn the public meeting. May I have a motion to adjourn the public meeting?
Motion.
All in favor?
Second.
Discussion? No. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The hearing is now closed, and the regular Board of Education meeting will start at 7:30. Thank you all for attending this part of the meeting. All right. Call to order. Board of Education regular meeting. The November 24th, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting will now come to order. Welcome again, folks. Please rise, face the flag
for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stack.
Mr. Wilkinson, present. Mr. Elger.
Here.
Mr. Wachowski.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson.
Here.
Dr. Ellis. Mr. Escalante. Mr. Kenwood.
Here. Okay, public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Your comments have substantially been reflected in others. We would ask, in the interest of time, that you please forego making them and that you provide the board with any copies of written materials that you may have. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and other interference with orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representation for a response if a response is warranted. For your convenience, we have this lovely clock here. Please use that to time your comments. Is anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper.
Thank you. Jeff Cooper, Glen Ellen. On Tuesday, a list was released of 115 visits from COD hierarchy to the Waterleaf restaurant, an expensive on-campus taxpayer-owned establishment. These 115 visits were for lunches, dinners, parties, and plenty of booze. Thousands and thousands of dollars not paid by those eating and drinking, but by us. This includes a May 16, 2014 receipt for $153.20, plus a $14 account with the name Catherine Wilkinson at the bottom. This would be the same as Wilkinson that sits on the District 41 board, appointed on June 9th. On Tuesday, I emailed her about this. Email is that deeper form of communication that some of this board prefers to public participation, including Ms. Wilkinson. It took 6 days for a response, which fell way short of any real response. We are due an explanation, and it appears an apology and reimbursement to the taxpayers of COD, and they would also be taxpayers of District 41. Nothing short is acceptable. On another ethical issue, we seem to have an interesting relationship with FGM Architects. We, meaning the district, but especially Bob Cicerella, the person who deals most closely with FGM, while overseeing millions of dollars of construction business for District 41. I'm not alone in feeling uncomfortable about Mr. Cicerelli speaking alongside FGM at a trade show in Tampa last month. Despite initially being told by Dr. Gordon that no District 41 dollars were spent on this trip, that turned out to be incorrect. We paid Mr. Cicerelli's salary for October 30th in between three vacation days. While I appreciate Board President Kenwood's looking into this, I'm convinced that the possibility of FGM covering Cicerelli's meals and possibly other things exists, and we won't be able to find that out. Dr. Gordon, there shouldn't have been any compensation involved. This was a vacation combined with assisting a vendor with a presentation, not work with any public purpose. To make things worse, at last weekend's IASB conference downtown, I was told there was an FGM reception party. I emailed the board to find out if they were going to attend. Outside of Mr. Kenwood, who wasn't attending the conference at all, no one bothered to respond. And he asked Mr. Cicerelli to stay overnight at this conference. I asked out loud if he attended FGM's soiree. Three conclusions I get. The superintendent should keep his employees out of compromising situations. Two, the board should get on top of these things. And three, FGM should know better to stay clear of District 41 employees and board members except during normal work. Thank you.
Anyone else?
David Moorhead.
My name is David Moorhead. On November 13th, I received an email from D41 telling me that my fourth grader would be invited to go to Robert Crown's puberty class this year as a fourth grader and not have the option to attend as a fifth grader like in the past. I have several questions still about this change. Firstly, the email communicated and stated, many schools in the area have used this program for fourth grade students for many years. My wife and I contacted Robert Crown and was informed that only 4% of the students that go through the program are in fact fourth graders. The vast majority is fifth graders. Why is there a pressing need to offer this program to fourth graders in D41 schools if it's not widely presented to other fourth graders per Robert Crown? Second, if you disagree with the prior assertion and believe that education is needed for fourth grade, why are you still making half of the students wait until fifth grade for the education? Additionally, Robert Crown discussion format is very open, with kids being able to ask whatever they want in a large group form. If we send our fourth graders to Robert Crown with the fifth graders, there'll be a range of kids in the room from 9 to 12 years old. Is it appropriate to have a 9-year-old hear what a 12-year-old has to ask about puberty? Most importantly, this information is critical for fifth graders before they enter the world of older kids at Hadley. But this is not the case for fourth graders who have another whole year at elementary school. To be blunt, is it appropriate for my 9-year-old fourth grader to learn about wet dreams at a school program? My oldest son learned about this at Robert Crown last year as a fifth grader. So I know that sensitive topics like this come up in Robert Crown discussions. Can we introduce into the curriculum topics that are relevant to fourth graders, such as hygiene, and leave the more graphic details of puberty that are covered at Robert Crown until fifth grade? Finally, this was an issue brought up when the think tank was first discussed. How would traditional fifth grade programs be handled with the multi-age format? Parents were told that traditional fifth grade programs would remain that way. What has changed since the prior communication and commitments? This is not a decision to be taken hastily. We as a schooling community must determine what is appropriate for fourth graders. We can't let it be arbitrary and driven by the evolving multi-age model. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will be addressing, I'll be meeting with my administrative team tomorrow to discuss this topic.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else?
Kristen Matthews.
Trying to find you.
That's okay. Good evening, Kristen Matthews, D41 parent.
This week has been a most amazing week for me, especially last week being able to participate in the PBL at Hadley, along with our reflections reception last Thursday night. I'm glad to see that Hillary's here, so I can actually talk about her. But it was such a great opportunity to be able to be at the school and be a panelist for the PBLs. I know we'll hear more about that tonight. I know Mr. Pachensky was there as well. But as I sat in that room and listened to all the panelists, that made me think about 30-some years ago, having gone to that same school, and thought to myself, there was no way I would ever be able to do something like that. And that was the general consensus of the parents in the room that were there, was what great life skills, work skills that these kids were learning by being able to collaborate, work together, and give presentations. These are great things that they'll be able to use in their future. Then that same day, I actually visited the reflections reception, mm-hmm. And as I stood watching all of the parents and students be so proudly displaying their work, I also stood and watched Dr. Gordon speak with several of the kids, and they were so proud to be able to share their opportunity or their experience with him, and for him to sit there just talking to these kids who probably were no taller than his waist. So it was fun to watch. Then today, as I sat at home, one of my younger sons been struggling for the last year with school, and today he sent me a fantastic text, and the text read, "I got 100%. And then 100% was on his math test. For the last year, my son has not been able to actually pass a math test with a meeting. Every single math test he's taken for the last year, he's had to get a he's had to retake because he hasn't met the standards. So we've been working very hard. I got him a tutor. He did the math back that summer. And I met with Mr. Stively, along with Emma Welsh, his teachers, and we were able to make some adjustments. And for the first time in over a year, he's actually been able to pass, let alone get 100% on that test. So I just wanted to say thank you, of course, to all of our teachers for the wonderful work that they do, from someone like Hillary Shumate, mm-hmm. and she loves to teach, she loves to tell the students, Brian Liedemann, Mr. McCluskey, Mrs. Kunkel, Mrs. Sabaro, what a great, wonderful group of teachers, great administration, who like to collaborate, and are truly here to make sure that our students are successful. So hopefully, by hearing stories of all the great things that our students can do from the PBL, for my son, who had struggled and now is so excited to be able to tell me he got 100% on the test today. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Anyone else?
Stephanie Clark.
Mrs. Clark.
Hi. I just had two quick things. I just wanted to follow up on some questions I asked before, and I haven't heard that from the board yet. The first one was, I was just trying to verify that with the portables no longer remaining at Lincoln, after phase one, that there will not be steam labs at Lincoln. Out of the building, and there won't be any standard. I think that was the plan for the portables. I just wanted to verify that. And then, second was, I was wondering if the district is going to be doing a follow-up survey from the spring on the 21st century room initiative. And if not, I'm going to do it.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it. She can answer the same thing. Is that it? Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. Presentations, reports, updates, and initiatives. PTA Executive Council Report, Ms. Lori Taylor.
Hi.
There you are. Hello.
Let's see. We met today for PTA Council, and quick report on what's going on with our PTA. We had everybody there. We had a book fair, and they were all successful. And I just want to point out that Hadley did a book fair for the first time in middle school, and it was extremely successful. So we have to thank Tim Glenn for taking that on, and of course Catherine for inviting us to go for it. So we did that. The treatment was very, during parent-teacher conference was very successful. Lincoln is doing their holiday gift shop on December 11th. And all of the schools are currently getting ready for our holiday sharing list, so community outreach which is sponsoring 220 families this year. So all of our schools are coming together to provide gifts and toys for our D21 children and families that are 18. We also had a PDL presentation this morning that was very good. A lot of information and questions, a lot of back and forth. I think it was very good for presidents to be able to ask those questions directly, as well as some of our delegates, to get a better feel for what's happening and knowing we may have a few bumps in the road, which has always happened when you start something new. We are also starting our safety fear planning, which is going to be in May. Currently, safety fear, some of our topics will be concussion and mental health. I think you're talking about internet safety, but after the conversation today, we may make some questions from mental health. Maybe I'll get a handle on that safety fear. So, let's see. Also, reflection. I think Kristen just mentioned the reflection ceremony. It was on November 20th that we had 140 people attending. 70 children entered our reflection ceremony, which was the theme was the world would be a better place if dot dot dot, and that was what they needed to tell us how it would be a better place. And of the 70 entries, 33 of our students are going to reach, which is very good. Special education parent support group is going to be on December 3rd. And then we also were told about, put it on your calendar for the Glibard Parent Series, which oftentimes people believe that is really for high school because the word Glibard is in it, but it's very applicable to middle school and even elementary children. One of the topics that's coming up is choke. We all choke. Kids start learning the idea of choking probably in third grade when they're starting sports. So just put that on your calendar, and I believe that is all that happened in PK Council.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Okay, next PBL presentation. Karen and the PBL coaches.
Well, we have kind of another group of teachers here tonight, and so I just want to turn it over and introduce the coaches to you. And this is really just kind of more of an informal celebratory day. You guys can go ahead and but really just to kind of highlight some of the work. So if you sat through the hour and a half this morning, you can rest assured this will be a slightly different from time as well as kind of what we're highlighting in that. But we have Christina Kellum right over there, and Christina's at Forest Glen and at Churchill, and then Sarah Rodriguez, who is at Franklin and Lincoln, Kayla Wheeler, who's at Churchill and Lincoln, and Hillary. I didn't say shoemaker, but I
sure.
She is at Hadley. And so they are going to kind of facilitate and introduce some of our keynotes tonight. We're really kind of highlighting their experience. We tried to get a little bit of a sampling.
If he's not here, I can still share
in for him. And then they'll just kind of highlight some of the feedback we've gotten from our community members and that, and Gil is actually here to talk a little bit about that. So I'm going to turn it over to them.
First, we were going to start off with the students. So while we share our successes tonight, we wanted to give you the student perspective. And actually, last Thursday, the Level 3 STEAM students at Franklin went to panel on the plastic, paper, or reusable PBL. They were asked to decide for the Village of Glen Ellen what would be best. Should they ban that bag, switch to reusable only, charge a small fee for plastic when it's used in stores? So the students researched that and presented to panel last Thursday. And then we had some words. Kirk Samples was able to chat with some of the kids after they did their presentation and just got this video. And he thought he was right one.
And it's not
sorry about the little bit of background noise and that, but it was kind of on the spot videotaping. But I think you could feel the energy in the room, and the kids were really excited to delve into this project and become advocates for themselves and their future and the environment. So it was an exciting day.
I had the pleasure to serve on that panel, and Alexa was speaking, and Alexa spoke for 5 to 6 minutes on the dangers to animals from plastics and never had a note card in her hand. And it was just, I mean, I barely remember where I parked my car. I was so what your stepchild did, so it was amazing.
We wanted to give you an opportunity also to hear from the teachers who have been doing this work with the students, and they have an opportunity to actually see how the students progress through this process and all the thinking that entails. So we invited teachers to come and present at different age levels throughout the school district to give you an idea of what's going on. And our first presenter is Judy Lefka, who is early childhood across the street at Forest Glen, and she brought props.
Oh,
right.
Could you click on Judy's name?
Sure. I thought I would present our weekly that we created after our PBL. Our problem that we gave our children was to pretend that it rains for 50 days and everything is covered. All the houses, everything that we see. And the scenario that we gave them was you need to build a boat out of materials that were donated from parents and that we had in our classrooms, and build a boat that can float for 2 minutes with two people from our block area, the little dollhouse people. And before we did that, we realized that many of our kids, we have children who are at risk. We have children, our ESL students, we have children with special needs in our class, and we have children who are typically developing. So we realized that we needed to do a lot of legwork before that. So what we ended up doing is we did a sink and float video just to kind of introduce them to the concept of sink and float. And then we talked about where does the water go when it rains? And so we actually went outside behind the building, and there's a sewer, and so the kids got to look in the sewer. And we had a big discussion about what they saw down there. And we were actually hoping that it would rain that week, but it didn't. So we improvised. And so Tom and I took buckets of water out and poured it so that the kids could see that the water actually went down into the sewer. And so we had a big discussion of kept raining and raining and raining. What would happen? Would it fill up? And one of the best comments that we had was one of the kids was like, yeah, that would be just like when your toilet gets plugged at home and it floods your bathroom. So, but it was great that they were starting to get that concept of flooding. Then after that, we went into what does sink and float mean? And so we actually did a sink and float activity in the classroom. So we took, kids were allowed to take things in the classroom, bring them to water table and other things that we had around the classroom so that more than one child could be doing it. What sinks, what floats, and understanding that. And even after we did that, some of our little itty bitties, because you have to realize we have 3-year-olds, we're still trying to understand that concept of sink and float. Then we let the kids go to the materials that were brought in and take those things and do sink and float with that to help them determine what are some good things that they could use to create their boats and what would be some good things that wouldn't be, or what few things that wouldn't be so good to create their boats. So after that, the kids were placed into groups, and we chose the groups because we wanted to put some diversity in there, some ESL kids with some other kids, kids who weren't as likely to talk with some kids that maybe were likely to talk. And so they had to work together to create their boats. And here's a big slideshow, which I'm not going to show you. So one of the things that was a big hit was the opportunity to use tape. And it was we had different types of tape. We had duct tape. We had masking tape. We had plastic tape. And so the kids, we let them do it. They had to figure out how do I get this tape off the roll. So some of them were working together using scissors. Some of them got the scissors out. Some of them, you know, asked for help, which was okay. And the other thing was how do you use tape? Kids were just taking tape and just sticking on it and thinking that the thing was going to stick. We go, well, let's see if that's going to stick, and you pick it up and it would fall off. So they had to figure out how much tape they needed and then put all those things together. So one of the things that we realized with building our boats is when we had initially planned our PBL is we were going to, after a week, have the kids test their votes and then go back and redo them if they needed to. And one thing that we realized at this age group is they need immediate feedback, because it would be too hard for them to have to wait a week and then take that vote and think about what they did. And so it was great to be able to let them put it in the water, see if it floated, take it out, and then start thinking about how they would redo that. Some of them, one of the groups in my class, I think redid their vote 6 times. But it was great because, you know, they ended up starting out with certain materials, and then they, by the time it got over with, it was something totally different material that was totally different. So what we ended up doing, see, it's just a picture of what some of the boats look like, and actually Christina has some in the bag there. So some of them were as simple as using egg cartons, and we actually kind of sabotaged things, so it wasn't just an egg carton, it was egg cartons cut in pieces, because an egg carton, if you just stick it in the water, it's going to float, you know, even if you put it. So we kind of sabotaged some things so that the kids would have to think about putting things together. Actually, the milk carton, they thought, oh, well, this will float, and it floated. But, you know, okay, well, the people stay on it, so they had to put it in there, put the people on it, well, it didn't work, so then had to realize, well, you know, maybe we need to cut it open. So we helped with some of the cutting things. And then, you know, there was the spout on the end. Well, the water was coming in there, so how do you deal with that? So once they created that, we ended up having our panel day. And for our kids, we decided that because they aren't used to anybody other than the people that they work with and maybe the other kids in the other classroom, Mrs. Clem's groups of children came in and worked with groups of my children, and they had to share with the children from the other classroom how they created their boats. And how we helped them do that was when they were creating their boats, we took pictures of the process. And then when before their presentation, we helped the kids go through those things so they knew what they had to say. And the pictures were there when they presented to the other students. And then they had to stick it in the water for 2 minutes to see if it was going to float. And some of them, I think because they had stuck in the water so many times, a couple of them didn't float. But it was really great because then we worked as one big group of not just the kids that had done it, but bringing in other perspectives of what do you think that we could do to help this float then. So it was bringing in a larger group of children, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful not only for the children, but we as teachers learned a lot too, that our children really need, depending on what it is, a lot of that prep work, like understanding and sinking and floating, understanding what flooding is, and we did a lot of that, and I think that helped. You know, the other perspective is having an age group from 3-year-olds to 5-year-olds and helping them understand things at different levels is something else that we have to consider when we go down the road. But overall, we felt like it went very well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You collected your boats.
So my takeaway is you traumatize the kids with 50 days of training. And then you sabotage their equipment.
We were kind of wondering how they would handle everything they had covered with water. But they actually thought it was pretty cool. They thought the sewer was fantastic.
That's cool.
Yeah. They like snow too.
What's that for life?
All right, so I'm the K2 instructional teacher at Seth Franklin, and we started our PBL my aide and I bought a iSpy birdhouse, which is a birdhouse that you can put on the outside of your window. And weeks went by, we weren't getting birds, so I thought, well, that would be a great PBL. So we decided to research why are the birds not coming and how can we attract the birds to our birdhouse. So what we did is we really had to start by teaching many lessons. What was research? Our students didn't understand what research was, so we learned that you can look at books, you can go on the internet, or you can go talk to an expert. So we went through and kind of made a little anchor chart about all the things that you could do to research. And then from there, we decided to come up with some questions because we were going to go to Cosby Zoo. And our students went to Cosby Zoo and talked to an expert about birds. So they did really good. They had their little note cards. They presented their questions, and they got a lot of good feedback. So after that, we decided to bring, we started collecting materials like egg cartons and milk jugs and just other things around the house that we can make a bird feeder out of, because our kids started to come up with the idea of let's make a bird feeder, let's attract them with food. So our kids got together and they started to really research or really brainstorm with each other, collaborate. So we put all of the material out on the table and I just said, well, how can we make a bird feeder out of this? And they broke into two groups and they really worked together to figure out what exactly would attract birds. So from there, we made posters of the material we would need and how we would make the bird feeders and what type of bird seed we would use. And then we presented it to panel. And Dr. Gordon and Karen Carlson came and they gave us great feedback. And we also had a couple bird experts come, and you know, our students did a great job. They really responded to what the panel said, and we made a bird feeder, and we actually got a ton of birds. We didn't see birds in our birdhouse yet, but we had about 15 doves come to our bird feeder all at one time. It was pretty crazy. So we actually now have a squirrel problem in our and our squirrels now eating all of our bird feed. So we're kind of extending it. And we just brainstormed some ways that we could get those squirrels. So that's kind of our next thing. But our kids did great. They was really higher level thinking. They were able to collaborate with one another, and they really understood what research means and how to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Thank you.
I'm Phoebe Aldrich. I teach STEAM Level 3 at Churchill. And we're right in the middle of the process. We haven't gone to panel yet. So we've kind of been experiencing a lot of hardships, but also a lot of great successes along the way. So it's been a process that the kids have been growing through and learning. So I just want to start with a couple quotes that I've gotten from the students. One of them said that, "I feel like I'm helping design and give ideas for a PBL because FGM can't do it themselves and need us, so I'm proud to be helping." So the other one had stated that, "I think the PBL is an awesome thing to work on in groups, and I like the ideas my groups come up with." So our PBL is designing an outdoor learning space for Churchill School that is to the best usage to maximize educational purposes. So they have done a needs assessment. They've worked in small groups to do a lot of research and take surveys and polls to the staff and the students in the school. And then they had to compile all that data and then now look at all the items that they would like to include and what are the reasons why. So the process that they're in right now is they're in their panel groups. And with those panel groups, they're having to design and develop a blueprint that is to scale drawing of what they would like the outdoor learning space to look like. And with each item that they place in there or their hardscape that they're putting in, they have to have reasons why they're doing that. So everything's supported with their needs assessment that they've already taken all the data from, and then they're also supporting it with the information they're finding. They have some tables they're working from FGM, rough tables from them, and then they're also working through a lot of the math practices, literacy standards, and a lot of the math standards. So it's been, for me as a teacher, I've been enjoying embedding all of the math standards and teaching them as we're kind of going along more authentically. So we've been getting into a lot of multi-step problem solving that they don't even really know they're in, because they're just so focused on what process they're in the PBL. So it's been a really fun experience. The kids have been loving it. There's been some times that we've had difficulties. You know, they're working in groups, and as fourth graders, we've had to have some lessons and go back to, well, how do we collaborate, and communication's key, and then how do we appropriately use technology when researching? So a lot of things that would help them relate so that they can have better communication skills in those groups. And then that's what all of their minds together are going to help them get to the process better. So they are currently going to go to panel in December, so December 15th. So then they have their vetting on the 8th. So soon here to come, but they're not quite ready for that presentation yet. So I'm excited to see what it looks like, and it's been a fun process. So.
Thank you, Didi.
So I'll
I'll speak for Ryan Lederman. He teaches 7th grade social studies, and social studies did have some difficulty at the beginning of the year thinking about what PBL would look like in a social studies class. So we were able to talk with some teachers from Adams 12, and they kind of really talked to them about it being more about skills versus content, using content within, but really focusing on what those skills are going to be. So Brian and his PLC really dove in, and they decided to tackle the problem of propaganda and how to differentiate between propaganda and real facts when it comes to political campaigns. And it was right at the peak of the governor race, so that was really exciting. And actually, four of you were able to be panelists. They just had a panel last week. And Brian, you know, we met, we had our planning, and they're very agreeable. They were willing to see how it went, and I think Brian was pleasantly surprised at how well it did turn out to go. He actually called me in my office one day and just said, you know, I just wanted to tell you the kids are really thinking. And he was just really, you know, taking a notice to this, that they were talking, they were collaborating, they were coming up with solutions so much that they went outside of class and did things that he didn't even know, like waiting outside polling places and asking people, oh, you're voting for them, and getting arrested because of this, you know, this eagerness to find out. They sent out surveys, which some of you I know took, the staff took. So those kids were just really going forward and really enjoying it. And Brian, actually, you know, we talked about the call to action after, you know, panel just isn't the end. What happens after that? And these three students who I had an opportunity to vet in panel decided they were going to reserve a room at the Glen Allen Public Library, and they were going to do a presentation. They were going to put up posters, and they were going to tell people, voters, what propaganda was. And I asked them, well, do you have a room? Like, well. But it turns out they reserved a room, and they put on a presentation Saturday. Unfortunately, the attendance wasn't what they hoped, but they actually went out and did it. All members presented, and Brian was there. So just the follow-through of that, you know, and really seeing them. And I came back the next day to, you know, feverish emails of all these ideas. He's like, I just want to ride this high. I just really want to keep going. The kids were great, and they didn't want us to end. So it was really great coming from a place where maybe, I'm not sure how this is going to work, to wow. I can't wait to do another one. So I wish he was here to tell you himself, but that was his story.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure. I am Linnea Urbanowitz, and I am the digital media specialist at Franklin Elementary, and I have the best job in the world because I get to work with everyone, kindergarten through fifth grade, and get to see this process from start to finish. So in this beginning stages, I'm in planning with the teachers and go through. So I'm basically like a techie librarian, if you're wondering what the digital media specialist for those of you. I'm in the library, but I come to the planning meetings and we line up lessons. Research skills, technology skills, presentation skills, and public speaking. So we start with research skills, like how you keyword search. Kids like to type in the whole question. If they have a question, they want to Google the answer that way, especially our level three students. So teaching how to use those Boolean search terms, how to put quotes, how to put parentheses to really find the best resources. And then onto website evaluation lessons, or how to note take, how to paraphrase, how to cite your sources, how to cite your pictures. Lots of little lessons that I get to see the bridge between the STEAM classes and the literacy. So both sets come in the library, or I get to go into the classrooms and provide these lessons, and then have different presentation tools lessons. How to use PowerPoint. My favorite, I got to do a deck by PowerPoint lesson, so showing different things not to do on PowerPoint, too much text, the flying animations, the typewriter, each layer coming through, and so teaching kids how to utilize these technology tools responsibly and respectfully, and just doing that in a way that can present your information. And then public speaking as well. And I think that these are skills that these kids are learning that I wish I had. Didn't take public speaking until college. And so to see these kindergartners learning how to make eye contact, how to shake hands, how to introduce themselves, how to be poised, it's unbelievable. It's really so much fun. I even had kindergartners today, and we were practicing public speaking, and they were giving each other compliments, and it's just amazing to see how they're growing already. I got to see Sam's kids in their video, and if you saw these kids, you'd say, wow, there's no way. If they can do it, you know, anyone can do it, and they are just so proud. So my favorite thing has been paneling, so because you get to see it from the beginning to the end, but the kids, the way they respond, they leave, they almost skip
out of the room, because when they finish and they present it to adults that they don't know and they get this feedback, they want to do it again. They're ready to go, and I just think that these are invaluable skills that they're learning. So really enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Gilda Ross, I work for the Glen Burnie Schools, and in full disclosure, I am a huge fan of PBL. And one time the Glen Burnie Schools had a class, and it was truly, truly a highlight for students who were able to take that course. And they solved some real world problems that really, to this day, have made a difference. So I was delighted to be a panel member. The group that I got to observe, they were studying the inequity in having internet access, something that I really am concerned with in my own work every day. So I was fascinated to hear what the students had to say. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard to believe that this was a middle school setting. It was a special day, and the students honored that special day. They were poised. They were confident. The creativity was really remarkable. All the different, every single group seemed to come up with a different solution. And I think you really find the meat when the questions, and I had lots of questions, and they knew their stuff, and they did a really, really wonderful job. And if we're talking about real-world skills, and we're talking about students taking responsibility for their own learning, this is what was going on that day. And I know it goes on a lot whenever this, a special day like this happens. And it was truly wonderful, creative, they were knowledgeable. I especially appreciated the kindness that they showed to each other. It was clear, wide range of skills in every group, and students were able to take their own passion and run with it. Perhaps you're interested in technology, so there were some great PowerPoints. It was clear some students would be running for Congress someday. Take the leadership in that way. But the kindness that they showed each other and the empathy for families who have less than themselves was especially really, really very touching. I just enjoyed that so much. It's just a win-win. I also think whenever you bring community into a building, it's a wonderful day. They get to see what happens, your tax dollars at work, if you will. It's really a great thing. So that was nice to see, too. You heard all, I just agree with so many things that have been said, the life skills, the collaboration, the detail, their supportiveness of one another, their organizational skills. They did leave high on learning. It's a win-win. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we have this one last thing where we've collected some things that our partners have said to us, and we just wanted to share those with you now.
And really, this will continue to loop and scroll, so if you want to ask any questions, that information, what you can continue to watch this, and we will address your questions, your two things at one time, so we can keep it on schedule.
Talk a little bit about what partners are. Who are these folks?
In September, we had a network partner breakfast where we just generated hundreds of names from people from organizations, agencies, universities, schools around us. We moved out from DuPage County into Cook County and into the city of Chicago, and we hosted a breakfast at Hadley. They were very impressed with our new facility at Hadley, the LMC, and we had about 30 people come that represented 25 different agencies, and those became our core network of people, and from that, our network continues to grow. Every time we invite an expert in, every time we and get information from out in the real world, we bring those people in, and they very often want to partner up with us. At the same time, it's a great opportunity for them to network as well, too. They add to their network group by coming into our network. So it's growing all the time.
Thank you.
Anybody have any questions, comments?
I had a quick question. I know in some of the documentation we saw kids out of the wind farm. I just saw the Illinois Wind Watcher there. Was that a part of the PBL as well?
Yes, I have a group of third graders at Lincoln School who have in the NGSS standards, they have wind energy, so they're studying wind energy, and
Conservation Foundation, which runs the McDonald Farm in South Naperville, they have a small wind turbine that provides about 25% of their power, and they're helping us through this problem of should they add a larger wind turbine that would power more of their facility. So we went out to the fields of northern Illinois and sat and looked very close to the wind turbines without crossing the no trespassing line. And then they've had several opportunities to, they spoke to Brooke McDonald at the Conservation Foundation and have been finding out more. We had an expert from COD in last week and a parent who's also a wind energy expert who said if we wanted to drive 2 hours south, we could see his wind farm, but we chose to stay.
It's great that they can physically get to locations as well. I think the panel that you talked about from Brother's group of the three that I had a chance to sit with as well, their takeaway, this was on the elections and propaganda and defining what that was or what it wasn't and what it isn't. And I had just been at a League of Women Voters meeting, and so you know they're going to be doing some candidate forums, and so I wrote to the mom of one of the panelists who's a fellow Churchill mom with me over the years and just told her what a great job her son did and the other boys as well, and that I was going to be giving their name to the person who's coordinating that, so there will be some of this next step connection, because I think, you know, as you guys are saying, it's such great ideas. How do we then engage them in that next step? So I'll be hearing back from them next week after Thanksgiving. So it'll be a nice connection that they can get out and do some work there.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. It was great.
Can I make one more point? I wanted to just talk about kids want to do good. And you can just hear from some of these students, they're so grateful about the opportunity to do good. That was special as well.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments?
I don't have a question, I have a comment, and it's to reiterate something you said that was sort of a shocking side bar of this, and you probably see this all the time, so it's probably not that big a deal to you. But in seeing the presentations, it was clear that these were not kids that, it didn't seem to me that these were kids that would necessarily hang around together, that they were kids you put together, so they didn't get to decide who the group was. And I was equally impressed with the teamwork. And when a child was struggling, how the other ones would help out. And, you know, if nothing else comes out of it but that, you guys have a tremendous success. And I saw it repeatedly through the day being a panelist. I was there in the afternoon on that same topic. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to me on the support that the kids were giving each other. And that's stuff that, you know, you teach that then, it's going to resolve a lot of challenges later on when they get over to District 87. So.
If you want to be a panelist, if there's somebody in the audience or people listen to this and you want to be a panelist, how can people get involved to do that if there's parents or people with particular skill sets?
Well, there's a PBL coach for every single school, so hopefully that's available. I don't know if you know, we're on the staff list. Yeah, mm-hmm. We should have a staff list for the school, so people need the staff list.
And then they can email you guys directly.
Yeah. We also sent out a survey that principals did at the beginning of the year with a link to a Google survey that asked for parents' names and if you wanted to vet or be a panelist or a speaker. And maybe we'll have that sent out again to gather more names. It's been a really useful tool. And
yeah,
I just made another connection today while I was at Lincoln for something that's going to happen with one of the moms that came in to help out on a panel, a fitness panel. So it's been working very well for us.
Are you guys spending a lot of energy getting panelists, or has it been a pretty easy process for you?
Well, it's time-consuming. Yeah. We want to make sure we get the right experts for the PBL. It's important that, because that's the part of the process where the students get feedback on the quality of their solution, so we need certain kind of people to panel. So,
I think you guys threw on the topic of an area of expertise and how many you might need. You know, like the seventh grade, we had 3 days of all day, so it was different. Mm-hmm. So it just depends, I think. But we all care about the right, as Christina said, the right experts.
And the size of the group drives the number of panelists you need, too. So I have a group of just third graders, and I don't need that many panelists because they can address all the needs of the kids through a very short amount of time. But when Hillary's working with a whole entire seventh grade and there are 400 students, she has a larger and greater need for more panelists.
Anybody else? Comments?
I just want to say thank you. Thank you to everybody who participated tonight for all the incredible work that has gone into our PBLs. Gilda, you said it so well. I just think our kids are connecting to real-world problems, and they do want to do good. They do want to make a difference in this world, and I think we're showing them how kids are actually trying to solve some of these problems and really trying to move forward. I so appreciate it. Dee Dee said something that really connected with me and wanted to make sure I reiterated around the standards. The foundation of all of our work are our standards. This is not about fluff. This is not about an add-on. This is about the work we're doing based on the foundation of the Common Core, the Illinois State Standards. That's what drives our work on a daily basis. The problem, that's what engages kids. That's what engages the adults as well. So thank you for addressing that. But most importantly, just thank you for all the work each and every one of you do and that you bring to the table. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's... I think one more comment. I think, you know, the fact that it is based on the standards and all that, and what I've always viewed as critical and what you guys heard me talk about was the learner characteristics.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always felt that's a differentiator for kids. So, anyway, you know, I heard some things that we have some learner characteristics and some of our habits and attitudes. I haven't pulled them up here, so it's not like they're in the top of my head, but you know, respectful of others, respectful in the environment, compassion. Right? We have other ones like curiosity, creativity, adaptability. So I think PBL is a way to get to that. Mm-hmm. And I just encourage, as I always do, that as you guys do these PBLs, that you look at these learner characteristics and see that, you know, that's coming out and that the kids are understanding that they, you know, they are showing compassion or they are showing creativity or the ability to adapt. And then those are the habits and attitudes that we have in the learner characteristics. And then there's the skills and applications. And, you know, what I heard from some of you is, you know, the ability to communicate effectively, right? That's one of our communicate effectively using a variety of media and technology. And as I have sat on these panels, I've seen that, right? I've seen kids do things with that. So that, to me, is in support of our learning characteristics. We're here to solve complex problems for these kids. You know, these are probably complex problems. You know, make connections between present and future. So these are all learning characteristics. I'm not going to go through them all, but I think it's important to, you know, as we keep doing PBL, to leverage these learner characteristics, you know, aligned with the standards, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
But differentiating how mm-hmm. you'll act in the world, in the marketplace, and making you a different person than just knowing what the standard is or knowing what sinking and floating is. That's
mm-hmm.
you know, that's sort of the standard. But the idea is to be able to research it, understand it, apply it to other things, make connections. And so that's, to me, that's the key to keeping the PBL vision and mission alive. So thank you.
Thank you. You're all free to go. So.
Don't you guys want to hear about our board policy revisions?
No, they're running. Yeah, take a nice little.
Okay, that finishes up presentations, reports, updates, and initiatives. Moving on to discussion items, board policy revisions. Paul on the policy committee, probably the policy committee
mm-hmm.
might be more apropos here, given our superintendent's a little under the weather.
Yeah, you don't want to hear my voice for too long. So
policy, Catherine.
Well, I mentioned this at the last meeting 2 weeks ago that we had met starting in October to address the things that were recommended by ISD starting in May, and then we met since then once further to look at things a second time, and you've got in the packet the list of policies that we felt we could bring in for the first reading tonight. I could go through each one of them if you want me to or not. I mean,
there's a package. You probably don't.
Yeah, the information's out there.
There.
So,
yeah.
I think at this point we could field questions if there are any. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd like to have this be an item for action at the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Terrific. Thank you. Anybody want to add to that?
I just have one comment to make and have people think about it. And it and it's the one. It's a policy 7180, prevention of and response to bullying, intimidation, and harassment. And
in the second paragraph, and I know that this is what press has updated, mm-hmm. but it's some of the delineation of the you know, what we're not, what you, who and what you don't bully around or about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this whole list. And I guess I would just ask the question. I went in and I went back to the bullying behavior continuum, all the work that parents did on this, mm-hmm. and our culture of care and all this. And one of the things that I noticed is that this is a very straightforward set of toolkit for us. The recognition of that we can't allow it. So when I went through this, it made me think of when Sam Black and I were on policy committee together, and we were updating some of the personnel policy at that time, and harassment especially. There was this whole list of harassment issues on the basis of some very similar to this, sexual orientation, religion, et cetera, et cetera. And when we looked at some other policies, what we noticed is that some other districts reflected back on their own approach to whatever that topic was to say, what's really our voice in this? And if our voice is, it's, we don't bully, period, you know, are we, by listing this all out, and again, juxtaposing this against the harassment, then identifying something that we might miss, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm simply suggesting that if you had that conversation, to share that with us, and if not, for us to think about that and maybe look at that policy that we ended up stripping and simply stating versus listing all these pieces, you know, all these individual pieces with the concern that maybe we're listing but potentially missing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we did hit on that. I think what you said is a concern, and that's that by putting together a list, you start to wonder,
yeah.
if the thing's not in the list.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And
if there are any, and maybe we're not missing any, but it begs the question. You know?
And I think one of the things that we're cautious about is to make sure that we meet all the standards now from the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they've changed some of the rules in that.
Right.
So we'd have to go back and look at that and see if there's any requirement that we have to step out, you know, spell out those things individually.
Right.
And if there isn't, we could do something just like that.
Bullying is not tolerated.
Yeah.
Right.
The changes from press were primarily to add to the list.
Right, I know.
And so yeah. I my first impression is it would be hard to still meet their guidance if we were to dispense with the list. But like you said,
I think it's a fair question.
I do too.
No, is it Illinois school code? And if it is, then what is that, to make sure we're abiding by that? And if not, then how do we keep our voice as a district, our values as a district, embedded in the policy without layering it one for one? If we don't need to do that, and we can do it in a way that's a tighter, then I guess that would be my.
Well, we can also just add one ourselves that says,
list
not,
that
not limited to and
it's
any,
Yeah, that's in here.
Because it says, or any other distinguishing characteristic.
Right.
But, it is hard to read. It's kind of buried in the very last part of that paragraph, and perhaps we could be more explicit about, we're not limited to this list.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's exactly what Sam and I were looking at with harassment policy, and then just ask the question, why are we listing all of this when we know that harassment is not tolerated, it's illegal, it's, all those things. So anyway, I just would be curious about that.
Just looking in footnote number 2, the protected statuses are mandated by the bully prevention statute. The list of protected statutes is identical to the list in 720 harassment of students. So it sounds like it's kind of goes to what you said. I think it's in the Illinois code that we keep it, but if we add on what Catherine said, to go to your point, bullying is not tolerated under any circumstance.
Right.
I think it's a strong statement.
It's the question of when you're listing it, then but in this case, it's okay.
Yeah.
Which is not the issue, but I would know.
And it's why they keep adding to that list.
I know.
Yeah.
I always feel like we're going to miss something.
It's a great point.
Anyway, that's my thought on that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, supplemental pay recommendation, Ms. Campbell.
Yes, our supplemental pay committee meets several times a year, and on this committee there are representatives from the board, from the administration, and from the Teachers Association.
And we were here back in October recommending some changes to supplemental pay, including some restructuring of the band stipends based on a new structure with band and orchestra, and then the addition of the ELL club. Well, our committee met again in October, and we're back with a recommendation for some additional clubs that we'd like to add at the elementary level: the Broadcast Club at Churchill, the Robotics Club at Lincoln, the Webmasters Club at Lincoln, and the Churchill Movers Recess Running Club at Churchill. We're working to bring some more opportunities to our elementary level students, especially at Churchill during the lunchtime hours, so that there's some options for kids to get involved.
Any questions?
Well, I'm a member of the team, the committee, and so I know that I state this, but I feel like it's important to do it every year, and that is to say one of the first things that committee does under Lori and her co-chair, Wendy, music teacher at Lincoln, is to vet, you know, where we are. And so we, I know that I talked to finance committee about this too, so that there's this vetting and then sunsetting after typically a second year when we see numbers go down or interest wane, or even teachers coming and saying it's not a good, you know, it's not a fit anymore, we need something else, that we make sure that we're balancing out those needs. So I know that the board received the first report in October where we were in savings of $6,400 because of that work. So I just want to make sure that's understood, and that we also look at student contact hours. If that's changed, then we make sure that we're not paying at that level, that we correct it, or vice versa. If we need extra coaches like wrestling, which had this huge turnout, and for safety reasons we needed to add that other coach, you know, we do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Last time the Finance Committee, we did talk about this today, but the last meeting, one of the things that I asked was the attendance key, because I think it's important more than we're sitting here talking about, you know, student hours and all that, and mm-hmm. based on that, that we make sure that our records are kept in the okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? I thought some of the, you know, ads were pretty good.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Interesting stuff to do.
Their thoughts all. They put some good things. Some very good stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
Action items. consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes Human Resources Personnel Report, Employment Recommendations, Finance Facilities and Operations Treasurer's Report, Investment Schedule, Monthly Revenue Expenditure Summary Report, Summary of Bills and Payroll, Vandalism Report, Disposal of Surplus Property, 2014 and 2015 FOIA Report, 2014 Report on Shared Services or Outsourcing, School District Payment Order, November 5, 2014 through November 18, 2014, and other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, November 10th, 2014, regular board meeting. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Ms. Brzezinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, superintendent's recommendations, full day kindergarten. Paul, do you want to summarize the recommendation?
Yeah, I'll keep this very brief. Strongly recommend that the board give me the authorization to engage FGM to look further into an early learning center on the Spalding site, and also look at modifying existing building classrooms and core spaces to accommodate full-day kindergarten. We've already looked at a K-5. We have that concept. FGM would come back to us with two concepts, and then we would look at how do student staffing numbers fit within each of those models. We would bring those pieces back to you. We would also bring back numbers of cost from construction to any other human resource costs that we would have we would make available to you. But this will be that opportunity to really look at three different options: a K-5, an early learning center, and adding on existing building classroom and core spaces to accommodate full-day kindergarten. This would hit the board's priorities around elimination of all elementary portables for this one. Ultimately, we still have Hadley. to look at. But as I speak about this one, it really hits your core areas around right sizing, elimination of elementary portables, and looking into full day kindergarten. This could also give us an opportunity to expand other programming for the district, such as special education programming that currently occurs in different case school districts for us.
So when you say you're going to look at capital...
Can we ask clarifying questions now, or do I do the motion first?
Motion first, and then we'll go into the questions.
That was your summary, right?
Yes.
Thank you for the summary.
You're welcome.
May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to approve the administration's recommendation as presented? Motion.
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
Discussion. Dean.
Okay. So when you talked about you were going to get costs for capital and then human resources, besides human resources, we're talking about ongoing operating costs.
Correct. Thank you.
So it isn't just human resources. It's going to be the one-time outlay and then the year after year outlay, right?
Thank you.
Great. So it's operationalizing an EC center, and the cost of that vis-a-vis what we know, at least what we have currently, that will be updated for a K-5.
Correct.
But that's not part of this, for clarification, that's not part of this.
Of this motion. Recommendation.
This no. motion is simply about having FGM
right.
give us those.
Help
provide us
work.
With a conceptual drawing. Because I did also hear you say that you would come back with the cost. Are you saying the cost of the building?
To build the facilities.
Mm-hmm. So is that part of their deliverable?
That will be part of theirs and FQC's. FQC's.
And that's all, that's part of the.
That is part of the cost.
That meaning what? Again?
The cost to build the facilities.
So can we...
Okay.
Do we have a cost on building the K-5?
Not at this time. That wasn't what we were requesting. So we'll have all three of those costs.
So I want to make sure I understand the delivery.
Yep.
So we're going to have an estimate for building the K-5.
Correct.
We're going to have an estimate for building a early childhood center.
Correct.
An estimate for
adding on
right sizing, or are we going to do it both ways? In other words, are we going to have a cost for and I'm making an assumption because
mm-hmm.
this get pretty complicated matrix here. If I do a K-5 and I understand the cost of that, I assume there is still some infrastructure work that needs to be done in the other four elementary schools.
If the board chooses to go down that road.
But I think we have that analysis. Mm-hmm. Like at Lincoln, we already have the analysis of taking over time.
Assuming a K-5? Do you have it for
Lincoln?
Yeah, Lincoln we do. Yeah. Because
no,
we were able to
assuming
pull.
An early childhood center, too? And assuming a...
not the cost combined, but we can yeah. combine those costs for you. Because we looked at the Lincoln, the Churchill pieces in the past.
I think the important thing to note for clarification purposes, depending on the option that you're looking at, K-5 or early childhood, the utilization
mm-hmm.
of the four existing K-5s would be different. So I read in this recommendation that FQM will give us what the utilization of those facilities would look like under scenario A
yeah.
scenario B.
So yeah, and I would think that if we did an early childhood, that the infrastructure challenges at the buildings would be different than if we built a K-5. That may be a bad assumption. I'm not an architect or anything, but I would assume that if, for example, all the kindergartners and preschoolers were out of the buildings, that the infrastructure may be a little different than if they were still in the buildings.
So let us bring that back to you. And that's what that's my request, is that we look at those pieces and we bring those back to you, because they will be different. I mean, an early learning center is different than a K-5, and how does that impact each school? That's different.
Right.
So we'll bring those back to you.
That may impact us in terms of gym space or...
Absolutely.
Right?
And that's what we bring back to you.
And then is the understanding that as a part of this, that we would get the cost of fixing the infrastructure in the four buildings, assuming there was no K-5,
correct.
And assuming there was no early childhood
correct.
Center.
Correct. That would be its own standalone.
So that's, I mean, that's a lot of...
Yeah, you're not going to get this next week. It's going to be a few... Yeah,
2 weeks.
Yeah, maybe two and a half.
Give it to the kids.
Yeah, give it to the kids, and they'll get it done for you.
Can I just ask one last question? After the conference, one of the things that we saw this weekend at the conference, in addition to having getting its award of merit, and we had a chance to see that, which was great, the LMC, was also a design that was given an award for an early childhood through five centers. It was a small district. Mm-hmm. And they had, I don't know if you remember that, but I took a picture of it so I could hold on to that. And in knowing we were coming back tonight, and I wrote Paul over the weekend mm-hmm. so that he would have my notes on this, but I went back to look at Scott's presentation and also Mary Hornacek's too, because those were the two buildings that are in most distress in terms of being able to do a kindergarten program, which cannot Forest Glen on the cusp. If there was any change in sections, not going to happen. So the piece, Paul, that you're bringing back in terms of some of the core changes, might that also reflect being able to do some adjustments so that we can, you know, right size while we're looking? You know, what mm-hmm. is their space, knowing how, I know I said this to the mm-hmm. board and I said this to Paul over the weekend in my note, that it just struck me that there's just nowhere to go, and that, and I said this, I felt that Mary was being kind to her basement space in terms of that being faculty space and other space, and Scott in terms of, you know, space where there's, you know, separators for eight teachers or four teachers with, you know, max children, so... we know in all of our buildings we're not using space the way it was meant to be. So can there be some flexibility as we look at that?
I would hope so, that we would be able to look through all of those scenarios and be able to find that flexibility mm-hmm. and make that come alive for each of our schools. Because we can continue using our facilities the way we are. But I think as we look forward into the future, how do we best serve this community? Not for today, not for tomorrow, but in the long term. How do we serve this community the right? This is a long term. And it's going to take courage. Courage by the board at one point, and then courage by the community if they want to go down this road to solving this problem. Long term solution. This is what I believe is the most appropriate, is to look at these three solutions.
Well, as long as the thing that I want to make sure we're looking at is the buildings that are in the biggest distress while we're looking at an all-day kindergarten solution. What's going on in those buildings that will allow for that, but not be an in-out. So if we're only taking this and then plugging in extra kids, but mm-hmm. still feeling more distressed.
And then you can't have that.
Right, so it's now, but it's also...
You got to look at programming, how are things laid out within each building.
Like you said, program drive facilities, yep. not the other way around. And then the only other comment that I made in my notes to Paul, and this was a little bit of from being at a couple of sessions at the conference this weekend, was the use of kind of a mini space, as I'm calling Spalding, and but trying to think about other solutions for the whole district. For instance, the lack of the building of our fine arts programs and the lack of space. I went to go to the fifth grade concert the other night at Hadley. I could not find a parking yeah. space, and then by the time I got in there, it was like three quarters of the way done. So, you know, it turned around. So that's part of it. So might there be some options, creative options, to do some larger auditorium space at our mini-me space because we might do an EC center that would alleviate some of that and allow for nicer space mm-hmm. that even the community can use, right? So... you know, just some crazy.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Who would put together the transportation piece? And
we would.
If we had you or your staff?
Us in collaboration with Illinois Central.
Okay.
So
because I'm just thinking, if we had a concentrated early childhood center, that's going to be more transportation, I'm assuming, than what we experience right now.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, they're all going to get bus there.
That's right. I mean,
whether it's K-5 or...
That's some of the operating costs we're talking about. Yeah. Make sure we have the operating costs.
Yeah. So, that, I mean, it's a good point.
It might be just further distance.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're right. Mm-hmm.
The way I'm viewing this is an input to a model that you're going to put together.
Yeah, we'll
and there's a lot of dimensions to it around the pros and cons and costs associated with the alternatives.
We just want to bring you three different models at this point. Okay. And at that time, we will bring associated cost. We'll bring that to you, to the community, and others to continue that vetting.
Can we give FGM a preferred delivery date?
Probably not at this time, to be quite honest, because I think they're going to need to spend some significant amount of time with us and my staff. So I would hate to sit here today Let me engage with them in the next week, and then I can give you some a closer deadline.
Okay.
I just don't know how much time it is of me, Karen, Lori, Bob, and the staff to do that. So I want to make sure I sit with them and really talk them through.
It's a fair question.
Absolutely.
Give us the timeline.
Well, when we get to the point that we're going to pay them, then you know we'll tell them when we need it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of, I just want to make sure, because we're exploring multiple options here, and I know we've discussed it as a board. Just want to make sure we're all on the same page. But the Early Childhood Center at one point was, you know, for lack of a better term, not as much of a priority. Mm-hmm. I assume the board member wants us spending time on looking at that. I mean, I don't know what the question is on the Early Childhood Center. To me, it's can it fit on Spalding? I assume it can. I know it has to be one level. So I don't personally know whether I need to spend money to say if I did an Early Childhood Center on Spalding, what does it look like? I mean, I just care if it fits or not, and then we decide if we want to go down that route. But forgetting that point, do people want to look at the Early Childhood Center as a potential solution, because it wasn't on our list before? So,
well, I raised it, you know, way back in the spring, and I went with board consensus. You know, people didn't want to move that forward, and that was fine. And then I looked back on my notes and I have them with me, that we were talking about some of the all day kindergartens, but it wasn't a hue and cry, I guess I would call it. I mean, it wasn't top of the mind, but it was underneath it. We had just had a visit from Paxton. We were talking a little bit about it, some of the other schools. But I think as all-day kindergarten has now, full-day kindergarten has come on the table as a request, you know, from a year and a half ago and now where we are, that it makes some sense to look at that in lieu of the space.
Yep, so I know where you're coming from. I just want to make sure that everyone else is okay, because we're going to spend money to look at that. To me, I don't know that we need to. I'm comfortable in all the Early Childhood Center will fit on Spalding. So I don't know that I need to see anything, but if you guys...
But they're not going to just say an Early Childhood Center is 10,000 square feet that can go here. They're going to give us some design.
You'll see something very similar, very conceptual, though, like you did last November on the K-5.
Right.
You won't have the details behind it, but you'll see where it's laid out. Because I think one of the important pieces, how does it lay out in that property, even though it's similar in nature to the four-point-whatever acres over here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different configuration of the acreage at Spalding.
And we do need the operating costs.
Yeah.
So we need to have an estimate of what it would
be.
Yeah, the operating costs, we don't need
for the constructions.
Yeah.
But if they provide us, they're going to say, here's what it costs to build an Early Childhood Center versus a K-5, I would see value in that. And so I want to make sure that that's a deliverable we're getting out of that.
You will.
Okay, so everyone's on board with that. And then the other part of the recommendation was expanding special ed. Again, not really.
There's an option for us.
So what parameters are we giving around expanding special ed for? Is the expanding special ed for all three scenarios, in other words, K-5, Early Childhood Center, or right-size the other four buildings, or is the expanding of special education only for the Early Childhood Center?
I would say it for all three.
For
all
three.
It's an important aspect that we need to be looking into. But it's not, I mean... It's a piece that I think we need to be looking into if we have that available space through our schools. It's incredibly important that I think we educate our students in District 41.
So we'll see conceptual drawings of that.
Yeah, where classrooms line up.
Okay, and...
John, can I just make one quick point?
Yeah.
You're already in conversations with Mrs. Gallo around that anyway.
Absolutely.
So this isn't new information. I mean, you
Absolutely.
Told us months ago that was part of her coming in to do assessment.
It was actually part of last year's Phase 1 and Phase 2 recommendation. It's in there around also looking at other programming. And I think that's the important piece here, that we're always looking at programming. What we continue to do currently is we jam our schools full, and there's no flexibility in our schools. And I want to create flexibilities for the board. I'm not saying I'm taking the lead here, but I want to create flexibilities for the board to say, do you want
other programming? I've listed special ed, but is there other programming that could, in the future, again, we're looking future forward, there are other things probably going to be on the horizon.
Well, we know we have dual language, and they're getting scaffolded up, so things like that.
To that end, when we're talking about this early childhood, mm-hmm. I've heard the term used, we're looking at a single-story building, is what we're saying. Are we looking at options in an early childhood center to also include a second floor that's Spalding?
Yes.
Because then there's flexible space. Because, yes, it's limited for the children of that age mm-hmm. to be on the first floor. But that property tends to tell us that it should be a multi-story property.
Yes. So yes. It will not be. The only option you want is one floor.
Because as long as they're doing this,
they might as well look at other.
I
think what we're trying to find out, Joe, is some on the second floor can like art mm-hmm. or music mm-hmm. or gym be put
well,
on.
Well, you said the single story, and that's what got me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
I wanted to make sure that we're looking
the
at
limitations of
which, you know, was
the limitations of
by the age group
of kindergarten,
yeah,
early childhood center.
But means. For FQM, they'll be looking at a building that will
utilize
FQC. Thank you.
We've got a few letters and.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then, well, so what? Just trying to understand, but because I don't think we really discussed as a board the expansion of these programs, and we talked about it informally. But what parameters are we giving around expanding special ed? Are we giving it around? Are we doing it by, hey, four classrooms, two classrooms? Are we giving it by this type of program or this type of program? So they
I would
know
look
what to design to.
I would look. No, we're really looking at just the flexibility within our schools to hold programming. Do we have ideas in mind around what type of, if it were special ed? Absolutely. We have ideas in mind. Karen and Lori and others and Michelle have had those conversations about what would be the most appropriate to bring back into our district.
Okay.
Yes, John, I don't feel qualified to give parameters around that. I feel like that needs and is appropriate to come from the administration to say these are the best options to bring our special needs students back in, and these are the programs that would make sense. So I would defer.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel qualified either. That's why I'm asking if the administration is going to
provide
we will.
Some
really
parameters around what that is.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice for us to know that as well.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm just wondering if we would be giving ourselves a little more wiggle room if, rather than specify expand special education programming, could this say provide more flexible use space without limiting it to special education?
If that's what the board, my recommendation is my recommendation. I'm going to stand by it on the special ed because I do believe it's an important aspect of what we're looking at. But if the board wants to change it, I'm open to programming.
Well, my assumption is that special ed could drive different types of facilities, which is why mm-hmm. I think it would be important for the architects to understand that, hey, not only are we looking for additional space, but also special ed space, which may require different types of facilities, different types of square footage, and you know, things like
design.
That.
Design. Yeah. So I'm comfortable with the direction you're heading in.
Okay, thank you.
I think by our current design, Catherine, this is maybe more to your point, is that the way the space in our four elementaries is being designed is to have the spot flexibility, movable, you know, cabinets and all that other thing, so that we can, on a year that we have this weird blip in kindergarten, we can then adjust for that.
Right.
And that was in all of the sessions I went to this weekend, a lot of they talked a lot about the flexibility of space. And that's not, you know, shackling yourself.
Right,
to
right. I think John's raising a good point. You know, what are we asking the architects to do? The more, the clearer we are with them about what it is that we think we want them to design, you know, the better job they can do. Mm-hmm. So if we tell them special ed, then that's what they're going to do.
Which I agree with.
Yeah, I just in the recommendation, I don't see the detail around the assumptions and deliverables, but you're getting feedback from us on what
we're
getting.
Where you
want us to go. Want to make sure that we get that back so that we know, you know, what we're getting and that FGM agrees that they're going to provide this for $10,000.
Yeah, maybe to John's point in your follow-up letter to have that
I'll detail that.
Right, so that if there's anything that we find like we've missed, we can get right back to you.
Sounds good.
That'd be helpful.
And then I'm sorry, but one other thing is, is the assumption four sections at every school? I mean,
we'll bring you all of those pieces. So that's where we're really going to have to look at each school, each site. So at an early childhood center is very different than a K-5 around sections and numbers. So we would bring you all of those scenarios with each one.
But if you're right-sizing the school, the answer is no.
No, it's right. It's the kids in there with whole day kindergarten. You're correct.
So that's where I'm going is that so we're I think that's part of the key assumption to know what space we need, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and traditionally we have been a four-section set of schools. I don't exactly remember, but I thought the K-5 option was a three-section on Spalding, and then another one was a three, and the other ones were fours. So you're going to provide those assumptions.
We'll provide you all those assumptions. We'll show you. We'll walk you through each scenario, the K-5, the early learning, and the additional schools, and what does that look like with the students and the sections.
And the additional schools will be with and without something as well.
We would not bring anything. If we're adding on to the schools, you would not be creating an early learning childhood center or a K-5. It's all, you do one or the other.
Well, so I thought it was a little different because I thought I might do an early childhood center at Spalding or a K-5, but I still may have some work within the four buildings.
If the board chooses to do that, absolutely. Those pieces will be available to you, but that's not going to be the overall recommendation. You know, those.
No, I know that's
each
not
one of those studies.
Right.
Yeah, okay, we're on the same page.
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions? Patrick?
Good.
Thank you.
I think we lost Maureen.
Yeah.
It's an important time.
Everybody's sick. Don't even get
roll call.
Okay.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Yes.
Ms. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alford?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwick?
Yes. Okay, second discussion item here, transfer of funds for the elementary school additions. The administration is recommending that the Board of Education approve and adopt the following resolution to transfer $7 million to the capital project funds for the elementary school additions. Resolution of the Board of Education directing the school treasurer to permanently transfer monies from the education fund to the operations and maintenance fund. This transfer will be in the amount of $4,300,000. Resolution of the Board of Education directing the school treasurer to transfer funds from the operations and maintenance funds, the capital projects fund. This transfer will be in the amount of $4,300,000. Resolution of the Board of Education directing the school treasurer to partially abate and permanently transfer monies from the working cash fund to the capital projects fund. This transfer will be in the amount of $2,700,000. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
Thank you for the second.
You're welcome.
Discussion.
Nope. I'll lay it out for us.
Yep. Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes. Okay, superintendent's report. Can you report in your condition?
I am not reporting. I am good.
Board reports.
I think we're going to suspend those so we can get Paul home, but on December 8th we can
talk
about some of the outcomes from the conference.
Have we all agreed to suspend our board reports?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, terrific.
Thank you.
Upcoming meetings, December 8th, 2014, public hearing of the 2014-2015 proposed tax levy and regular board meeting, 7 p.m. Central Services. December 8, 2014, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Service offices. January 12, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services. January 26, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services. Other matters, are there any matters to be considered?
The only thing I want to announce is that Patrick and I will be hosting a board coffee at the Glen Oak Restaurant this coming Saturday, the 29th. We wanted to make sure we got one in before the holidays, so unfortunately, Glenbard West did not beat Stevenson, so they will not be going downstate, but that means that maybe there'll be some more people here who are around to come and come to coffee. So we welcome you. We'll be hosting providing coffee and some rolls and muffins. If you want to order breakfast, that's on your own. But Cedric and I will be there starting at 8:30. And some information, but really just a conversation and take questions and ask for your feedback and report back to the board, and then we can plan another one with some other board members.
And that's from 8:30 to 10:30?
8:30 to 10.
To 10. And will it be in the train room, or do you have a...
It's going to be in the back room, yeah, that extra space, but just a part of it. So when you walk back, it's that long space, and we'll be to the left in the back corner. They're giving us graciously, kind of carving out half that space for us. So
that's called the train room.
The train room. Thank you. The room. The back. I call the back room.
Closest to
see everybody there.
Thank you both for doing that.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And I think I want to clear that, because I thought the way I understood it is we can be there if we'd like. However, if we are, we are not allowed to participate or answer questions. So you guys, if another board member chooses to show up, you guys at the beginning will set the stage that you're facilitating this and that the other board members may be present to listen and observe, but that they cannot participate and answer any questions. Is that the correct interpretation of...
That would be, we would have to post this as a regular board meeting if there was any other board member there, and then suspend like District 200 does. So I did look into that, John. I know that I emailed you. And they have to post it as a regular meeting, which means the superintendent needs to come. And, you know, we talked as a board about this. We talked to Paul when we first initiated this about wanting to have something separate and different from the town hall, which is he's going to be facilitating on December 3rd. So my only concern with that, and I talked to one of the board members at 200 about this in terms of how they first laid out their copies, and it was they attempted to do it with having it be no agenda, not a formal public meeting posted. But when a third or fourth board member came, and this was a couple years ago or three when they started it, there was some confusion by community members that you know, Erica couldn't answer because she wasn't the host. So why can't you talk to me, you know, et cetera. And it created, in a minimum, it was awkward for board members because they couldn't speak, and because it had not been posted, it wasn't a formal meeting. So that's the rule that we have to follow in terms of Open Meetings Act, and I know that that's frustrating, but, you know, we're wondering if we can test this with this model and to have the two of us host this, come back and report back, see what kind of feedback we get, and then, you know, have two more people rotate into it, you know, come after the first of the year before the next town hall meeting and try it that way. So,
and just to be back on what you said, Todd had reiterated the same thing. It would be very awkward for three board members to be sitting there. One had to recuse themselves from the conversation, not be anywhere, not even in proximity of the other two. He said it's problematic at best. Is it legal? Legal, but it's ripe with problems. And he would, as your board attorney, he would recommend not doing it, but it's not illegal. It does not.
Right. That was my understanding, is that, yes, it is awkward, but it is not illegal. And we do not have to post it either if a third board member shows up.
Well, we won't. Our plan is that we're not posting it as a formal board meeting, because it is not a public board meeting.
Right.
It is it's an informal coffee conversation. We wanted to, you know, do some different type of outreach. That was the goal. You know, that's the model that we're looking to try.
Yeah, I appreciate you putting that together.
Yeah, so I appreciate it, too. I don't know if I'm around Saturday or not, but just to let you guys know, if I am and I want to go, I will be going, and I will recuse myself and not participate. But part of this was community engagement, and I'd like to hear what people have to say. So,
well, and John and everybody else, and you know, for the record, we met, you know, previously to plan this and go through some, you know, thought on this, and we'll certainly do a follow-up. I've asked Erica, Patrick and I, if we can have kind of a tear-off so that there can be some takeaways for people to jot some notes down that we can bring back so there'll be something written. We're going to have a laptop set up so people can register for the any of the district, you know, e-news, any of that type of stuff that they may not have as community members. And there will be some folders put together with some of our current information if they have, you know, haven't had kids in the schools for a while and just want to know what's going on in terms of our, you know, programs and that type of thing. So there'll be some handouts for that too.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other matters? All right. Adjourn to closed session. There is no closed session this meeting. So we have a motion to adjourn the November 24, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting.
Motion.
May I have a second, please?
Second.
Thank you for the second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Nay. Motion carries on a voice vote. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you for attending.